one minute to talk to the public that's here. We are going to offer an opportunity for public comment within the agenda segment that has our board chair. So he will speak. We will take a few public comments, and then also the RAC members will be able to do the same. That's probably enough, and we are very fortunate to have the chairman of the board, Jack Evans, with us. I'll let you tell whatever details you'd like about your past, but I do know that you have been on the DC Council for, what, 25 years?
25 years.
And on the WMATA board, and you've been the board chair a couple of times before this one. So have at it and take whatever time you want.
Well, I appreciate that. First of all, thank you, and good evening, everyone. Thank you all for coming out tonight. And I appreciate your interest in Metro, and I hope tonight we can have a very informative discussion about where we are, where we're going, how we're going to get there, because the situation is very serious, to be honest with you, very serious. Before I start, Tom Lipinski, where are you, Tom?
Over here.
Over there. Tom Lipinski on my staff. He's my communications director at the council, but he also covers Metro for me. And maybe one of the most knowledgeable people in Metro, about Metro in the whole region, given the time that he has put into this studying it. So yes, a little bit about my past. I've been on the council 25 years on May 13th. Started in 1991. In part of being on the council in 1993, I went on to the Metro board. And stayed on it from 93 to 99, served as chairman in 94 and 97. Back then, Metro's job was to build Metro. We were constructing the system and doing it in a somewhat of a haphazard fashion until Dave Gunn became the general manager. He came up with this idea called the fast track. And what we were going to do, we were building one line at a time. I don't know that we would have ever finished. We decided we were going to build all the lines at once. And that's why we got the system built. And in, I think it was January 2001, I have one of these little statutes or whatever, we completed the 103-mile system. It started out being 101 miles, then when we added Largo, we ended up with a 103-mile system. Back then, the system worked fine. It wasn't that old. It opened, as you know, in 1976. So in the 1990s, it was just a relatively new system. The trains ran on time. They were all kind of new and shiny, and everything was fine. So I left Metro 2000. And didn't give it too much thought after that. Wrote it occasionally. Was on the council. I became head of the finance committee on the council. And that was what my focus was until January of last year. January of last year, reorganized. We needed somebody to go back on the Metro board. Muriel Bowser had been the representative, and she was elected mayor, so there was an opening. And nobody wanted to do it, so I said, I'd be glad to do it. How hard can it be? I'll go over, get the free lunch, you know, go to a couple of meetings, and that'll be it, right? Didn't seem too hard. Before my first meeting in January of last year, not this year, but last year, CFO came into my office in a panic. He said, Jack, place is a wreck financially. You can't vote on anything tomorrow. We really have to talk. So I went to the meeting and indeed started to discover that things were not as they should be. 4 days later, the following Tuesday is when we had the accident and Carol Glover was killed on our train, suffocated on our train. I always want to mention her name because she was not some lady who died. She was Carol Glover. She was my age. She was grandmother. And she died on one of our trains. And that was a horrible incident. Then I really realized that things were amiss over here. Corbett Price was my other new member who the mayor appointed, and he and I started asking lots of questions. We ran into a lot of opposition on the board, a lot of people who didn't want to talk about the past. My first question to everybody is, what happened here? How over the last 15 years did this place go to wreck and ruin? How did the finances end up like they are? And who's responsible? And of course, even as of today, we still don't know who, because nobody wants to talk about the past. But it is really something that someday we will get to. I want to tell you where we are, because understanding where we are is important to figuring out where we're going to go. It took us a whole year after I got there to get a new general manager, Paul Wiedefeld, so I'm very happy we have Paul on board. I made a decision if I was going to be on this board, I want to be chairman, because I was very disappointed and disturbed about where we were going and the disorganization that I found. And just the idea of meetings never started on time, never ended on time. We had committees that everybody was on. Everybody was in charge, so nobody was in charge. It was that kind of an operation. So a year after the accident, as you know, we had another fire almost identical to the one that Carol Glover died in. And Paul and I were looking at the system and discovered that indeed, this is old history, which you all know, inspections that were supposed to have happened never happened, and we were facing a situation where we could have a fire at any time. We closed the system down for the 29 hours and we discovered that there were cables that were ready to burst into flames and that the system was in actually worse shape than we even thought it was in. I made the statement at the time that we are going to have to close parts of this system for maybe months on end in order to get it fixed. There was enormous pushback from the region. People's answer to my making that statement was obvious: kick Jack off the board. That would be the answer. Really, that's on the Twitter accounts. Maybe some of you were involved in that, sent those out. I don't know. But the idea isn't you kill the messenger. The idea is you figure out what happened here. I was not far off the mark. We are going into a year-long period when there are going to be a lot of closures on this system, and people in the region still don't have a handle around it. The headline in the paper, the Post yesterday, was the people in the region just don't believe that it's going to happen next week, and it is going to happen next week. So we discovered we had a system in terrible disrepair. So how did this all happen? So I went back and read this book called The Great Society Subway System. And if you have an idea, I forgot my copy, but if you ever have a chance to take a look at it, it tells you the history of Metro. And I'll do it very quickly because the history is important as to how we got here. All right, so Metro back in the 60s was an idea of Lyndon Johnson, the Great Society. We're going to build a subway system in our nation's capital. And the idea of paying for it was going to cost, by their estimates, around $2 billion. And the idea was we will pay for it by defunding all of the highway. It was the interstate highway system that was going to go through the district, the Three Sisters Bridge, if anybody remembers any of this stuff. So it was about $2 billion worth of highway money, and they were going to use that to build Metro. And in the operations, you'd have enough people riding it that would pay for itself. We actually might get a little dividend, you know. And the district, remember, didn't exist in 1967. It was Maryland, Virginia, and the federal government. We didn't exist until 1975. So we weren't really a part of this original idea. As you know, the cost was ridiculous. The system cost $12 billion to build, not $2 billion, and we lose $900 million a year in the operation, so it doesn't pay for itself. There's no dividend. It's ridiculous. Public transportation costs money and has to be subsidized. But people had this in their mind when they did this, which is why the financial setup was the way it was. So we have two fundamental problems. One of them is not repairable, and the other is. We were built as a two-track system. A two-track system, one train goes this way, the other goes this way. Most of the other, and understand, there's only six other subways in America. There's a bunch of little tiny ones that don't count. But you have New York, which is 230-some miles, has over 2 billion riders. It's a class by itself. And then you have us. We're second. We have 117 miles. We have about, the ridership's what, 170-some million a year. And then you have two others that are in our class, BART, San Francisco, and Chicago, have about 104 miles. And that's it. You know, you have New York, Chicago, BART, and us. And you drop down, you have SEPTA in Philadelphia, you have Atlanta, and you have Boston. And then that's pretty much it in the 50-mile category. And then you go down to like Miami-Dade has 25, and then everybody's under 10. So you only have a couple of systems in the country. And like New York and Chicago have more than two tracks, so it makes it easier for them to repair their service because they can close things down, or they have parallel tracks, things of that nature. We have a fundamental flaw. We have a two-track system. It cannot be corrected, which is why we can't run the service 24 hours a day, which is why we have to close it down and do repair work. And that has led to where we are today. I'm telling you what you already know. We have never had enough time to go onto those tracks at night and do the repair work that's necessary. We are closed from midnight to 5, Sunday to Thursday, and from 3 to 7, Friday and Saturday. So it gives you a grand total of, I think it's 33 hours maybe. But when you do the setup and takedown, it really reduces the amount of time we have on the tracks to 19 hours. 19 hours a week out of 168 hours. And it's clearly not nearly enough time to do the work that's necessary to keep this system like we want it to be. Now, we have fallen so far behind that the place is really in, it's in wreck and ruin. It's like a house that you've had and done no work on for 15 years. But the better example is imagine this. Imagine a highway from here to Richmond. It's 117 miles from here to Richmond. A two-lane highway, two-lane superhighway from here to Richmond. And that's the only way you can get to Richmond. And there's no on lanes or off lanes. You can't get off. You've got to drive this for highway. And you haven't done any work on it for 15 years. So it's full of potholes. The guardrails are falling off and everything. But that's your highway. Half of it's above ground and half of it's underground. We have 58 miles above ground, 50 miles underground. And you have to go out and fix this thing. How do you do it? And that's the challenge that we have, is how do we fix this thing? Now, Paul's come out with the SafeTrack plan. We're going to do these kind of surges in 15 different areas and try and repair and replace things. But I want to caution everybody, and this message is not getting out. At the end of a year, at the end of the year of everything we're doing now, the inconvenience that's going on, this system is just going to be marginally better than it is today. It'll be safer, no question. It'll be a little bit more reliable. And that's where we're going to be. Because just fixing the train tracks is not going to fix this system. We have these cars, and we have these other problems that have to be addressed. So on the operations side, that's our challenge. Now, on the finance side, that's the good news. On the finance side, it's much worse. And we have to get our hands around this. Because this is the part where the region is just not focused. I've gone around and spoken as many places as I can and continue to do this. The NVTC, the NVTA, in Montgomery County, to the boards of trade, to the federal city councils, to the DC council and the mayor, to governors, to everybody. And when people are dealt with catastrophic news, whether it's a death or something, your first reaction is denial. That's what you want to do. You want to deny that it happened. Or you want to say that it happened, but it isn't as bad as people are saying. Those are the kind of reactions that I'm getting. On the finance side, I want you to remember three numbers. And I'm going to say this everywhere I go, because I want everybody in this region to remember three numbers. 300, 18, and 2.5. That's all you have to remember. If you can remember 300, 18 and 2.5, you can understand how bad a shape Metro is in. 300 is $300 million. That's the amount the federal government owes us every year and doesn't pay us on the operation side. Federal government pays zero on the operating side. Where do I get 300? Go back to how our budget is structured. The operating budget for Metro is $1.8 billion a year. Half of it, and these are round numbers, half of it comes out of the fare box, and half of it comes from the three jurisdictions, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. That's why we pay for Metro on the operations side. Right now, the budget we just passed, the 2017 budget, is balanced on $100 million of one-time money that cannot be done again. So going into the FY18 budget, which we're going to start now, we are $100 million short. Our expenses increased by about 2% a year. Which is not unreasonable. So you add another $20 million onto that. So I'm $120 million short. And we are going into labor negotiations. And as much as people want to talk about labor negotiations, we need to be strong, we need to push back, we need to do all these things that people are talking about. The fact of the matter is, by the charter, my compact, I forgot to bring my copy, compact, we have binding arbitration, okay? What binding arbitration means is no matter what I put on the table and what labor puts on the table, we're not going to agree and we go to arbitration. We pick an arbitrator, labor picks an arbitrator, and then we mutually agree on a third person. What generally happens is the third person will look at everything and split down the middle. So whatever the demands are, we're not going to come away with nothing and say, you know, you get nothing. Actually, you get less than nothing. That's not going to happen in binding arbitration. What's going to happen is there's going to be something. So just for purposes of discussion, say they get another $10 million or something. So now I'm $130 million in the hole going into the FY18 budget. Many of you, rightly so, have said, how can we charge the fares we're charging when we're closing the system down? It's unfair. And you're right, it's unfair. I think the whole system, fair system's unfair just the way it is. This time and distance and all this craziness, you can't even figure out how much you're supposed to pay. I would have had a flat fare system. I'd bring the fares down. So if we want to address those things, we're going to need more money. The federal government has got to show up with $300 million. So I have to go to the region, to Maryland, D.C., and Virginia, and tell them they're each going to have to come up with another $50 million. And I don't know that they're going to be willing to do that. $300 million, remember that. Why would the federal government pay? Number one, they have four directors on my board, just like Maryland, D.C., and Virginia. They're the fourth leg of the stool. Number two, 50% of the federal government workers ride our system. You know, we're taking to work all of the federal employees in those congressional offices, in the federal departments. They're riding our system. And thirdly, the federal government paid two-thirds of the cost to construct the system. They paid $8 billion of the $12 billion. This is their system, for God's sake. So they have to contribute. We are not some other city. There are no four federal board members in Chicago or New York or some other place. 50% of the federal workforce in Chicago, it doesn't even exist. So I can make the argument that we are America's subway and they should contribute. 18, what is 18? $18 billion. $18 billion is the amount of money I need over the next 10 years to keep the system running on the capital side. Okay, what does that mean? 18 is a big number. What's he talking about? How do you break that down? Three components. Number one, train cars. Remember I said at the end of the year, we're going to be marginally better? That's because we are running terrible train cars. We're running train cars that were running in 1976. You've heard me make the joke. Where do you find an original Metro car? In the Smithsonian? No, on the system. Just get on the elevator, see it down there. And in all honesty, we can't be running these train cars. We have 1,200 in the system. We have to replace them all. We need about 1,500 cars. Train cars cost $2 million a car. They're coming in at 12 a month, 144 a year. Over 10 years, cost $2.8 billion. So I need $3 billion over the next 10 years to buy new train cars, new 7,000 series cars, and replace what we have. Okay? There's no money for that right now. Number two, we have a bottleneck in the system called the Roslyn bottleneck. And what is that? There's two ways for Virginia to get into the city. We have that one bridge that the yellow line uses. Then we have a lot of trains coming through that tunnel in Roslyn. Now, as we go out to Dulles Airport and beyond, that tunnel holds 26 trains an hour. Okay, that's the capacity. That's kind of where we are. By the time we get to Dulles Airport, we're going to have 40 trains an hour trying to get through the 26-train tunnel. It won't work. You're going to back trains all the way up to the airport. Seriously. It'll be ridiculous. So we need a new tunnel. They should have built the tunnel before they built the Silver Line. I don't know how you build the train out to Dulles and you don't build the tunnel. This doesn't make any sense. And when I spoke, I remember at the NVTC, somebody said, well, maybe we can run them across Key Bridge. Yeah, we could do that. And then where would they go? Into the river? Where would you do? I mean, what are you talking about? You need to build the tunnel. We cannot excuse it. We cannot say it doesn't need to be done. The tunnel costs between $3 and $5 billion, and it gets more expensive every day. Now, I used to sit, as an aside, when I first got on the council, I sat on this thing called the Wilson Bridge Committee. We're going to rebuild the new Wilson Bridge. And we talked about it, and we argued about it. We thought we'd build a tunnel, we'd do this, redesign it. We never did anything until the bridge fell down. It literally fell down into the river. Then we built the new bridge. So we can do nothing. We can wait till whenever, and we can back the trains all the way up to the airport. And then we can think about building the tunnel. But it needs to be built. Finally, it takes probably about $1 billion a year in capital dollars to repair and upgrade the system, the tracks, the lighting we're talking about, the signage, everything that's gone wrong with this thing. So over the next 10 years, we're going to probably need about $1 billion a year to address those issues. There's your $18 billion, 10, 5, and 3. So these are real numbers. These are actual things that I need to make this system work. 18, now 2.5. Everybody knows what that is, right? $2.5 billion unfunded pension liability. Metro has a $2.5 billion unfunded pension liability. What does that mean? That's just a big number. What's he talking about? The District of Columbia, my city, had a $2.5 billion unfunded pension liability in 1975. We did nothing. By 1995, it had grown to $10 billion, and sunk the city. Because you have to pay the retirees. Now, what a unfunded pension liability means is you have the nest egg. And the egg, you put money into the nest egg, and you grow the egg. And then the egg makes money in interest, and you use that interest to pay the pensioners. That's how it works. But if you have no egg, like Metro has, we have no egg. There's nothing there. So we have to pay pensioners out of our operating dollars. And I can tell you, at some point in time, that will become the biggest expense that we have. And we will no longer be able to run the system. That's what happened in the District of Columbia. So we have to address that. So those are the numbers. These are the finances that I'm dealing with in Metro. Now, I have some ideas. On the operating side, we just have to get the $300 million from the feds. I will be meeting with members of Congress. This is something I can use all of your help on. If you know members of Congress, if you know people that can be supportive of this idea. You saw when I testified up there, it was kind of the crazy group I testified before. I mean, one guy even said that we should study Disneyland, Disney World, the monorail in Disney World. I don't know how you compare the monorail in Disney World to our subway system, but he thought it was a good comparison. Then I thought about it, and I have an answer. In Disney World, they have a monorail, and Disney World, the federal government, pays for the monorail. The magic, right? The Magic Kingdom doesn't kick in. Fantasyland doesn't kick in. Tomorrowland doesn't kick in. The little subsidies of the, but the, and so if we have to talk in idiot terms, I can respond to idiot terms. I can explain how Disney World lives. But in all seriousness, trying to convince that crowd that they need to support Metro is a tough sell. But we need the 300. On the $18 billion, it's the dedicated funding source for the region. I've been talking about this for years. We have the 2005 study. We've finally gotten everyone's attention. Roger Berliner and people over at COG are pulling people together. And we are trying to find out how to do this thing. My idea is take the sales tax in the region from 6 to 7% or percent, whatever it is. It would produce a huge amount of money. And ours, the district, is 575. So we're even lower than Maryland, Virginia. I'm willing to take everybody to 7 and use that money dedicated to Metro. But I've got to get everybody on board on doing that. And right now, Virginia particularly is adverse to being supportive of that idea. So any of you from Virginia, you have got to talk to your legislators. Now, I got this crazy letter today from the leadership in Virginia. It's actually addressed to me. And it's from, the House Majority Chairman, the House Majority Whip, and it goes on and on, all these signatures. And they go on to say that we want to make it abundantly clear that we do not support a dedicated funding source for Metro, period. And we will not. That's what they say. So this is the leadership in the Virginia House that refuses to support anything to support Metro. They think Metro is inept and that we should just tighten our belt, and that's how we're going to fix this thing. So it's an uphill climb on that, but that's what we need. And then finally on the $2.5 billion, how did the district survive? Well, what happened is the federal government took the entire $10 billion of unfunded pension liability and took responsibility for it. They pay it. We started over with zero, but our commitment was that we would fully fund, the district's commitment, we would fully fund our pension liabilities. And 20 years later today, 25 years later today, we are one of the few jurisdictions in America that is 100% funded in our pension liability. Remember the egg? The egg is big enough to be able to support all of our pensioners without us putting any operating dollars in. And that's my commitment from Metro. If we get rid of this thing, we will use our dollars wisely and fund our pension. So that's how we solve these problems. So it leaves us in a tough situation here, financially, operation-wise. There are solutions, but it is going to take a collective effort on behalf of this whole region. And right now, we're not there. Where we are is people saying to me, let's run the trains on Key Bridge. Let's do crazy things that don't make any sense. We have to focus on getting the dedicated funding source, getting Congress to focus on putting money in, and getting Congress to focus on the pension liability. And at the same time, we have to focus on getting the system fixed. And that's Paul's, more than me, that's Paul's kind of bailiwick. And he is out there. He is not taking any pushback. I've got letters, calls from everybody. Everybody wants to do something different than what we put out there. Nobody wants to close the service at midnight. They want to keep it open. They want to start something over here, and Paul's been very good. This is my plan. This is what I'm doing, and I'm going to get the system at least marginally better, safer and better than it is today. So that's where I am, and I'll be glad at this point to open up the floor to questions, comments, anything anybody has, ideas. I am as frustrated as all of you about this. I cannot believe that the system I hope helped build has fallen into this shape, and I want to get it fixed. And on the more minor issues or lesser issues of Metro, I too am astonished. I too am astonished that we waste money on buying chairs. Where are these new chairs? I can't. Are they in the other room? I mean, I don't know how stuff like that happens, you know, and just this crazy stuff. Even the meeting room itself, I don't know how you people feel. That thing looks like Joseph Stalin out of the Soviet Union. I can't even see over the thing, let alone see. I mean, I would rather, and I'm going to suggest, holding our board meetings in here, where you can actually see the members and have discussions and stuff like that. That thing is just ridiculous. So there are things about this place that have got to change. It has to be more open, getting information out. Trying to get information from Metro is like, it's like pulling teeth. As the board chairman, I have a hard time getting information out of this place. So I know how frustrated you are because I read these tweets and everything of trying to get it out. And what happened recently with the rape, I was furious. I found out from a reporter when I was out in Las Vegas last week. I mean, how does the chairman of the board not know this happened? You know, how do we not know these things are going on? And I think there's a culture over here that is very, very, you know, circle the wagons type of thing. And we have got to change this. The good news is, again, we have a new general manager. One of the 16 board members who were here when 2 years ago, there are only three left. You now have 13 new board members. I just met with the three federal ones yesterday, and Tony Costa, who started in 2014, so he's been here actually less than 2 years. And so it's a new group of people coming in. I've given them the exact same speech I gave you. I have alerted them to the concerns that we have, how bad the system is, but how we can get it fixed. And so that's our challenge. So let me turn it back over to you, and
okay.
I'll try and answer any questions anybody has.
Thank you. I want to thank you for the very clear and visible, you know, we can picture the mm-hmm. whole situation that you described. As I mentioned, we are going to give members of the public an opportunity for a few questions before we go to the RAC members. And what I need right now is a show of hands. This would be comments that are specifically addressed to the chairman, not just general topics that you came here to talk about. Those will be later in the agenda after he's gone.
Yeah. And I'd like to get board members. I'm going to ask my board that if at least one or two of them come to every one of your meetings. What do you meet, once a month?
Yes, the first Wednesday of every month.
Yeah.
Which Tom knows because we talk
yeah,
often.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to try and get maybe
that'd be
at least
great.
Two board members every time you have a meeting to come and talk to you and listen to what you have to say.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the biggest part. Listen to what you have to say.
That would be wonderful.
Tell me how to get this thing to work better.
Yeah.
You know?
So can I have a show of hands for members of the public of who would like to speak? You get about 1 minute each. Who would that regarding this presentation? We have one? Is that it? Okay.
Testing.
So you have a minute to make your public comment and for the board
Thank
to
you.
Respond, for the board chair.
Thank you. I'd like to applaud you, Mr. Evans, for...
My apologies. I should have asked for your name and just if you're representing
Hi.
Some group
if
or just
you have
yourself.
One of those Twitter things. Tell me if you're one of those. Put a name and a face together. I can follow all of
Hi,
that.
Hi,
I want to know the person who said I should
right.
quit. Who's that person?
Hi, my name is Rich Frangiomore. Yes, I have a Twitter thing. What matter, Rich? I don't represent anybody. I'm just a writer. I'd like to applaud your effort to make SafeTrack happen. I think it's a fantastic thing. And basically my question is, what can we look forward to with SafeTrack 2 regarding the core, the A route, all the sections that were identified by the FTA, the large section of Ron McPherson, where the fire was,
right.
You know, that there's not a surge for McPherson. What's next year?
Okay, yeah. It's a great question. And let me preface by saying all my comments are my comments, okay? I am the chairman of the board, but I don't speak for the other board members. And some of the other board members have asked me if I would say that because they don't necessarily agree with some of the things I say. So these are my comments. I am chairman of the board, and I do have a seat in the district's voting representative. I think that the one-year surge is going to be, at the end of a year, is going to continue into year two and year three and beyond. I do not see how we can upgrade this system to the point where we want it without continuous maintenance of the nature of what we are going to see in the next year. We are going to, it just isn't possible because you are identifying areas that we haven't even focused on. I think what Paul is trying to do, first of all, we have the federal government, the FDA, and everybody put their 2 cents in. So we're going to try and address the safety things that they think are important. We're going to address the safety things that we think are important. And then we are going to address upgrading this whole system. It is, and I need, the only way we can do it is to get track time. I've explained to you, the two-track system, the only way to correct it is to close things down and go in and correct it. And so I think what we're going to be looking at is, and this shocks everybody, but I think going, I don't want to say the next 5 years, but maybe the next 5 years, we're going to see continuous disruptions in Metro in order to get it fixed, because there's no way else to do it. I can't wave a wand or snap my fingers and make this thing fixed. It has deteriorated too badly. So I hope it's not that long, but I don't want to say it's not. And you remember, I said we should close the blue line for 6 months. People went crazy. Now we're closing the system for a year in different segments. And people have to realize that in order to get the system back to where we want it, it's going to take that type of commitment. And this doesn't even get to some of the things that drive me crazy, like going into these dark caverns that we call train stations, and that we go in that the elevators or the escalators don't work, or the signs don't make any sense to me, or all of these things that need to be, the lighting, all of this needs to be done. And I've traveled the world and looked at other systems, and I recognize, you know, when you go to Beijing or Shanghai, the governments are different things, but they are spectacular systems compared to what we have here. And that's what I want to do. I want to get ours back where at least it is a presentable system, and today it's not. So I think we're looking at a lot longer time period. But let's get started. You got to get Paul Wiedefeld. We're starting, and that's the most important thing. We're getting started, and we'll see what happens here. See how bad the disruption is. Maybe we can make this thing work. I don't know. I don't know how it's going to work. I met with our DDOT director today, and we're scratching our heads trying to figure out how do we run buses from here to there, and how do we accommodate. And remember, there's a lot of people in our city, especially, whose only means of transportation is us, public transportation. You know, Leif was telling me today that 30% of the people eligible to have driver's licenses in the district don't have them. And the only way they can get around is bus and rail. And so, you know, we have our hands full.
Thank you. I understand we have a second member of the public. Are there any others? Is that it? Okay, so one more.
All right. Thank you. My name is Brian Gann. I'm not representing anyone. I'm just a rider. You know, I'm going to be impacted starting, you know, here in 5 days at the first safe track going from Boston out to Rest, and yeah, going to lose, you know, 2/3 of my trains during rush hour. And as someone who's ridden on weekends, I mean, it's tough. Even with 20-minute headways, there are still delays, and 20 minutes sometimes turns into 30, 35 minutes, and you throw a rush hour in 100,000 more riders. What is Metro doing to make sure things keep moving? If there's a train breakdown, that's just going to make it worse. Are you playing more 8-car trains, ideally like 100% of the running trains?
These jurisdictions, you know, Maryland, D.C., Virginia, the counties, everybody are looking at the situation, right, trying to figure out how to make your ride less inconvenient than it's going to be, as is Metro. So we're going to do all we can to make sure the trains don't break down. Running 8-car trains is a problem because of our electricity. Okay. You know, I didn't even get into those types of things. But if we wanted to run all 8-car trains, we don't have the power to do it. And so the best I can tell you at this stage is we're going to get into this, we're going to see what happens, and we're going to try and address some of the problems that you're talking about now. That's why it's important we hear from you. You know, if it's really a mess, then we got to figure out how do we make it less of a mess. But I don't want to delude anyone into thinking this is going to be easy.
Right.
It's not. It is not. And it's necessary.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to move on to the RAC members, and I'll go around starting this way. If you can each, I should confirm. What is your end of time today, tonight?
I have to be somewhere. What time? Like 7:30, 8 o'clock. Something like that. Yeah.
So we have to leave. Finish here at.
What time is it?
By seven. I'm.
Can we finish by
okay,
seven?
Okay. So all right. So we need each of the questions to be as yeah. quick as each. You know, yeah. one question each as quick as you can. So we'll start with Joseph.
Believe it or not, I'm up for re-election, although I don't have an opponent. And tonight is the, believe it or not, the marijuana forum. No, it is. And so I have to go to the Black Cat and give a speech at some point in time. So that's all I have.
Thank you.
Maybe everyone will be so stoned they won't even remember I didn't show. I don't know.
And Joseph, with you and the others that do speak, just give your name briefly and what
sure,
jurisdiction
you represent.
Sure, my name
is Joseph. Yeah. Thank you, and I represent D.C., and thank you. Mr. Chairman, I was wondering, for SafeTrack, it seems, correct me if I'm wrong, but there seems to be a priority of safety, reliability, security, all of those things, and it almost seems as though some of the things that you talked about the dim and dingy lighting, the poor signage, the horrible speakers or out-of-service elevators, escalators, they've almost taken a back seat. We've been pushing that more aside, and I was wondering what steps Metro's taking to make that better during this time, and also if they would focus on just one station and making that this one station everything that you would want it to be, just to see as a proof point if that would make things better or if ridership increases. What proof points have been established in the past that we could compare to so that we could see what our progress is like or what our vision could be in actuality? Yes.
I think your assessment is accurate. I think those things that were so important to me when I first joined the board are probably going to take a back seat to getting safety, you know, getting things fixed, getting the cables fixed and the tracks fixed and everything else. And I think that's, from talking to Paul, that's where our effort is going to be. It's not going to be on fixing the lighting and the signs and all of the things that I would like to have seen done. It's too important to not do that, and I don't believe we have the manpower to do all of those things. I would like to see that maybe in the next phase, and I would also, I applaud your idea of maybe fixing one station up to see what a model station can be, but right now we don't have the funding for it or the ability to do it, so I don't want to delude you. Most of the next year is going to be focused on the tracks, getting the tracks safe, making sure the trains run on the tracks and they don't catch fire. Sorry. Yep.
All right. My name is Pat Sheehan. We've met before. Yep. You've seen me plenty of times.
Yes.
Two things. We'd like the Accessibility Advisory Committee would like to take you up on having board members attend our meetings too.
Okay. Sure.
Part of the group that is going to be impacted by the SafeTrack shutdowns or slowdowns is the disability community.
Yep.
We have a letter that will be coming to you early next week with some suggestions to improve communication with people with disabilities as certain sections of the tracks are being shut down or there are slowdowns, buses and that sort of thing. So look forward to your support with our recommendations on that. They very much agree with what the RAC has said, but it extends a little bit further to people with disabilities.
Sure.
And we hope you'll approve that.
Yeah.
Good.
And I will encourage, you know, again, I have all new board members. And what I've told every board member, this isn't the place where you come for the free lunch, go to a couple meetings, and then we'll see you 2 weeks from now. That's not this board. If you want to be on this board, you got to really be a board member. And I believe attending these meetings, as I said to the four federal members yesterday, is a big part of, now I can't make people do that, but I'm sure not going to let them off the hook if they don't. So.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you again for your comments. Quick question, and it's kind of piggybacking.
Jeffrey, and you're from D.C.?
Virginia.
Virginia. I'm sorry. Virginia. I knew that.
Which place? Which county?
Fairfax County.
Fairfax County.
Yeah.
Okay. He's Jerry Conley. He is supportive, but words are good, but I need action.
Yeah. So quick question. So how does Metro plan to measure success with SafeTrack? What are some key performance measures that the public should expect, or just the general ridership should expect going forward? Are they 1 month, 2 month, 3 month, 6 month goals that Metro has? And if they do, how would that be communicated out to everyone?
Okay, good question. And I'll tell you right now, I don't quite know what that is. I will give you what I think. I think Paul has to put that together as the person who's managing SafeTrack to give us benchmarks as to what we as riders can expect to see. what I would expect to see, number one, are less safety incidents, less fires, less times when, God, it was a good day, we only had one fire today, that type of thing. So we want less safety incidents. We want more reliable, as safety gets better and we have less of those, more reliability, you know, that if I get on in one station, I get to where I'm supposed to get faster. But that's going to be hard to measure because we're closing so much down. So the reliability is going to become worse, not better, during this time period. So I'll consult with Paul, but I don't know over the next year that you're going to be able to see the results of our changes until we're done. So, but on the safety side, I think that's what we can expect, is that things are safer. But again, you know, the proof will be, as we progress in this, what the progress is. And I fear to say that as we get into this, I wonder what we're going to find. Are we going to find the system even worse than we think it is, and that it's going to take even more time and more money to fix? So the jury's still out on that stuff. But I'll see what I can find out from Paul.
Thank you. Colin.
Colin Roosh. I'm an at-large member. I live in D.C. So, you know, I want to thank you for your honesty and candor on just laying it all out there.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone disagrees with your assessment. I think we're all generally on board with the plan. But with respect, it's not as though your critics don't have a point. You know, Metro recently finished, not too long ago, a $4 or $5 billion rebuilding right. plan over 5 years. And, you know, what we realized later is that much of that work either wasn't done or it was done improperly. So if I am going to go to my representatives and encourage them to put more money in Metro, which I think is necessary,
yeah.
what can I tell them about what the board is doing this time around to ensure that money is being spent in an accountable way
yes.
so that, you know, the board isn't falling down on its job as a fiduciary right. You know,
right.
custodian?
And I think the answer, and it's a great point, because I want to know what happened during the Rich Sarles era, okay? He comes in after the Fort Totten thing, and then up until the day I joined the board, he quits, all right? What happened during that, was it like a 5-year, 6-year time period? They spent $5 billion, and they were supposed to fix everything. And the thing was worse than when they started, and the finances were in chaos. Nobody knew where the money went to. And so I have asked those questions. But as you can imagine, the pushback is nobody wants to talk about it. And there are people who have long people who have left the board that someday are going to have to be held accountable for this. So what do you tell people going forward? The best you can say is there's, you know, the new sheriff in town, all right? We got a new group of people, all right? 13 of the 16 are new board members. The 4 people from the feds, 3 of them, not Tony, but the other 3 are all safety experts. And Carol is I appointed her head of the safety committee. And she has a tremendous background in this. She's come out of retirement to do this. And I said to her yesterday, do not believe anything Metro tells you. Do not believe anything they tell you, because they're going to tell you what you want to hear. So you have to go beyond what they're telling you. And you're going to have to delve into this if it means putting on a hat and going into the tunnels yourself. And the other 2 guys, one guy's from the railroad, and the other guy's from, And so they seem to have these great safety backgrounds. So the best I can say is, we have our own members, and then you have the federal government sending their inspectors in to follow up on the work that's being done to make sure the work is being done. Because frankly, nobody trusts Metro anymore, given like those cables. You know, the cable that caught fire that Carol Glover was killed by, a year later, I'm told that nobody looked at any of the cables for a year. And they're, you know, 6, 4 of them were ready to catch fire, there were 28 in bad shape. Nobody was doing their job. So the best, that's what I can tell you. And that's, as chairman of the board, I have to believe that we are better at it now than we were before, or we're just going to fail again. So that's what we have to tell our representatives. And I understand it's like, well, we'll wait and see whether this works. Well, we can wait and see, but I'm going to run out of money. You know, that's what's going to happen. If we wait and see, I'm going to run out of money. And I have to borrow now in order to pay for these repairs, because I don't have enough money to do it. And so this is more problematic for Metro to have to go into the capital markets after we just got downgraded to borrow more money. And when you borrow money, you have to pay the debt on the money you're borrowing, which goes into my operating budget, which is now $130 million out of. You can see where I'm going with this. So that's why we have to get people on board. So hopefully that's the answer. It's the best I can tell people.
I'm Chris Barnes. I'm a D.C. representative. from Ward 6. I wish I could vote for you, but I can't. And on Twitter, I'm known as Fix Wamata. You may have.
Yes, I know you.
I don't know.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm gonna say that I'm a fanboy, and I'm gonna take some heat for that, but that's okay. You guys, meaning you and Wiedefeld, tag teaming Metro and getting things done is what needs to happen. I appreciate your bluntness. I reiterate everything Colin just said.
Yeah.
And I just want to make a couple points because I know other people are waiting. First of all, communication has got to improve. You're right. There's a lot of close to the chest. There's a lot of silos. Communication with riders specifically has got to improve at Metro. I daily sometimes report safety issues and get zero response. Zero response. And you can't go around saying safety culture, safety culture, safety culture, and then ignore when people report safety problems. So that's my first point.
And on that point, what would you want to – all right, so I take that message back. What do you want to have happen? Why tell Metro that they're not doing?
At minimum,
yeah.
A response. We've got it, and we've let someone know. I don't even get that.
Yeah, like our communications guy should respond, and they're not.
Can we give you the Twitter password? Because that'd be fine with me.
Tom will respond. Seriously, you
respond to riders more than Metro does.
Yeah.
Metro. And that's wrong. And that's my point.
Okay.
Is that has got to change. And I won't name
names. Got to get somebody at Metro to respond to this stuff.
Yeah, and I won't name names, but I'll say that.
Well, work with us and see what we can make happen here. Yeah. All right.
Point number one. And that's what has to be done to get people through this SafeTrack stuff. Because, like the folks you heard before, they're going to stick around if they're getting the communication that they're needed while it happens.
Yeah.
My second point is that I really strongly believe we need rider representation on the board of directors. And I've heard you mention that you want to reboot the board of directors, maybe cut out one member from each jurisdiction or something, make it smaller. I've heard you mention that in the past. If you're looking into something like that, please consider making the RAC chair, the AAC chair, maybe one more rider representative as a rider advocate on the board of directors.
Okay.
Because I know you guys are doing your thing to represent where the money's coming from.
Right.
But as you said earlier, half of the budget also comes from fares, and we don't really believe that that's being represented well.
That's a good point, too, yeah. And the whole governance, which I didn't even talk about, this goes to your point, has got to be redone. I have this chaotic, well, it's a better board now, but it's chaotic. I mean, you have a 16-member board. It's like the Kennedy Center or something. And they have all those people because they raise money for the Kennedy Center. That's why they're on the board. So you get in a group like this, and oh, my God, to try and get anything done is very difficult. So your point is well taken, and whether we need this giant board, and who should be on the board. I agree. Boy, we were talking about that in the 90s, having a rider representative on the board, and nothing ever happened. So governance is going to happen. Corbett Price is the head of it.
Barbara has volunteered, by the way.
Yeah. So good. Okay.
Thaddeus.
Quick question. You mentioned personnel. Do we have enough people to perform the safety work?
I'm assuming we do. Paul tells me we do. We have 13,000 employees in Metro. So I assume we have the people we need to perform the safety function. But even if we're a little short, given the federal government's involvement now and everybody else who's looking over our shoulder, my hope and assessment is that we have the number of people we need to do this. Yes. So that's where we are. Yeah.
Bob.
Hi, I'm Bob Fogle from Montgomery County. A couple things, mostly about customer service.
Yeah.
I think it's important that customer service be elevated dramatically, particularly elevated dramatically is an oxymoron, I think, with Metro, but I'm not sure. To get over this next period of time, people have to see, I think, that the employees of Metro share their pain, because a lot of people have experienced a great deal of pain, and it's only getting worse. So we need to get the Metro employees, wherever they are, out and talking to people and not hiding. It's not all of them, but it's some of them.
Yeah.
Secondly, specifically in terms of customer service, I think in picking up what Chris said, I mean, there are two aspects of customer service. Of course, one is just the employees just being responsive. The second is the department that's supposed to be providing customer service. Now, I've made complaints. I made a complaint 3 weeks ago. I get emails saying 5 to 7 days we'll get back to you.
That's an excuse.
I'm waiting.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just sitting here waiting, wondering, and the problem still exists because it's something that's visible on the track.
Okay.
It still exists. The second part of customer service is an example. There may be a good reason for this. When you close the system down for 29 hours, you know, with almost no notice, we ask the customer service department, what did you do? All these, you know, hundreds of thousands of riders are all of a sudden going to be inconvenienced. They don't know what to do. Their response is, we close the customer service department down at the same time we always close the customer service down, 8 o'clock, because we want to make sure our employees can get home at night. I mean, I would think that there are going to be lots of people in the next period of time while SafeTrack is going to be in operation. We're going to have lots of questions on how to get from A to B. And I think your customer service department is probably a good place to ask those questions and maybe get some answers.
Yeah. And we have a board, we have a committee on customer service. And there are at least 4 board members on there. And so I'm going to challenge those board members as well to do their jobs in overseeing the customer service department to do its job. But your point is well taken.
Well, I'll challenge the general manager.
Yeah, and the general manager as well. But we have to get the people who, yeah, and I agree with you. One of the things that, and I'm meeting with the head of the union again next week, and I'm going to say to Jackie, look, just tell everybody to come in with a smile, okay? Just start there. Everybody come in with a smile one day. Just your point. Walk outside of your booth or whatever you're doing. See if you can help somebody. You know, just make the atmosphere better. Because right now, it's miserable. I go in these things and everybody's mean and surly. And that's crazy. You can't have a mean and surly system. You can change that. So your point is well taken. We should be like the old Nordstrom store. Remember that? Where they all waited. They went out of their way to help everybody.
Yeah.
That's the kind of attitude that has to happen. And I'm saying to our workers, not faulting our workers. I think the leadership hasn't been very good. But we have new leadership now. And everybody's got to step up. You know, we pay our employees well. They have the best benefits of any system city in the country. Nobody has better benefits than we do. And people, given those benefits and salaries, have got to step up to the plate. So your point is very well taken.
Do we need to let you out of here? You're going to give us... Okay. One comment question, not three, not two.
I don't do multiple like these.
Will White from Prince George's County. Jack, my question focuses more on the courtroom next door and the chair issue. What is being done outside of the fact that recently we know that 20 managers were let go? What is being done to funnel down to find the inappropriate spending that's in-house? Because that, I know, has to channel into some of the budgeting problems that we're having. So anything you can focus on or speak to on that end?
Other than, you know, Mike Goldman is the new finance chair, and I've challenged Mike and the general manager, Paul, and our CFO, Dennis, focus on the finances and tell me what is going on and what can we do to save money. It just comes down to that. So as Mike, you know, begins the preparation of the FY18 budget, this will be the first time he's done it. And with Paul, this will be his first time. And Dennis, who is, you know, not that new, but relatively new. These are the challenges we have trying to figure out what we're doing in the house. So I don't have a direct answer for you. Where are we wasting money? I'm sure there are places that we can do things better and save money. And given, you know, the letter I got today and all the comments I get from the elected officials, they want us to tighten our belt. So I will do that. I will tighten our belt. I will figure out where we can save money. But saving money is not going to get me anywhere, as you know. The numbers are huge. Right. You know, if I fired 1,000 people at a salary of $70,000 each, it's a drop in the bucket compared to what I need to run the system. So not that we shouldn't look hard. And we will, but it doesn't get me where I want to get to. That's the problem. Yeah.
Thank Christine.
Good evening. Thank you, and thank you for clarifying and taking the time to come and speak with us. It's very meaningful.
And you're from?
I'm from Arlington County.
Arlington, great.
I just have a few quick points that you may or may not have heard in the past, but when we talk about and all the threats of we're not going to give Metro money from the Department of Transportation and the government in general, are they thinking about the business owners that are supported by this DC Metro system, where they may not get business if we're not doing our due diligence and getting the people there? There's more than just the riders that are going to suffer. There's also the business.
Let me make a comment on that point. You know, I think what politicians, they want to look tough, all right? So they make these comments. So the governor of Virginia made, who happens to be a longtime friend of mine, made this comment the other day, you know, I just signed something on the radio and I'm not going to give Metro money. Okay, good. All right, what's the reality of the situation? State of Virginia, Commonwealth of Virginia doesn't give any money to Metro anyway. None, zero. It goes to the counties and the city, who then give us money. So if the state doesn't give us any money, so it's a kind of an idiot statement to make. I'm not going to give Metro any money when you don't give us money anyway. Now, if they don't, it doesn't give it to the counties, and so Fairfax, Arlington, the city of Alexandria and everything, well, then they have to make the money up somewhere in order to give it to Metro. Now, always remember, if Maryland, D.C., or Virginia, if we ask them for X amount of money and they give me X minus, there is an automatic thing that happens. Metro stops running the bus service. We have to run. So if I don't get the money I need, we stop running bus service. It's never come to that. But when I was on the board last time, it almost did. The district tried to pull that stunt and said, we're not going to give Metro the money. So all the only remedy that Metro can have, not stop running the trains. What the way the system's set up is, the governments reimburse Metro for running bus service. So it's easy for us to figure out how much bus service we have to stop running in order to make up the difference in the money. So when the governor makes that statement, the answer to that, all the way to the end follow through, is Metro will stop running bus service in Virginia. So I caution elected officials around the region to make threats. I don't like being threatened. I want people to cooperate and work with me. But you threaten me, and you will pay for that. And I want people to understand that.
Thank you. When we talk about this, the big overall plan for the next year, I see it as being very overwhelming. And in general, that's what it gets picked up on, and that's what gets passed out to the people through the different means of media and social media. I think we need to start thinking about talking in the smaller increments, what to expect in the next 2 weeks to 1 month. Okay. I think that's going to be very important to the people. I've looked at it. I can't remember what's 2 weeks and next 2 weeks, and am I going to take a different line to get to work each day, or am I going to have the option to telework, where that might be a good week or two. So it's very cumbersome to think about the whole big plan.
Okay.
And I've brought this up to our other Virginia vice chair, unfortunately not here this evening, but I-395, which I live next to, anyways, there's quite a bit of a stretch. That's going under construction for about a year as well. So have we coordinated between the metro closures within that area along with the I-395 construction that's going to take place?
I don't have no idea, but my guess is no.
We need to move on. Valerie?
I was just going to say thank you, and I echo the communications and customer service thoughts.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
Sure. Hi, I'm Valerie Cook, and I'm a D.C. resident, Ward 4. And I would love to talk to my representative. Could you get D.C. statehood so we could get some representatives to talk to?
It would be a big deal.
And I think that puts us at an extreme disadvantage compared to my sister in Wyoming, who has three representatives, or those folks in Vermont or other places that have way less folks.
Yep.
So part of the reason that we're in this place we are is because of this history, underlying history. But I'm also one of your federal employees. And you talked about the feds needing to step up to the plate. I know you might have been talking about other folks, but is there something that federal employees could do to help encourage a decision that would support Metro?
Yes, depending on where you work, to encourage the federal leadership, whether it's in an agency or whatever, to encourage the congressional representation that they have to support Metro. It just, I just can't say that enough, that if enough federal workers, which number in the hundreds of thousands, stood up and said, this is important to us. We're not going to come to work today unless you support Metro. You know, something of that nature, and I know that's unrealistic, but that's the point I'm trying to make, is that I'm trying to get the data. How many employees in congressional offices ride Metro? When Congressman Micah gets up there and starts pontificating about Metro, I'd like to be able to say half your staff is not going to be able to get to work tomorrow, or they're going to be late because you won't help them. Those are the type of statistics I'm looking for in the federal agencies and in the congressional offices. So that's the message you can carry back, is that I'm a federal worker and I rely on Metro. It has to work for me, or I'm not going to be able to get here on time.
Thank you.
And last but not least, Sita.
Yeah. Hi, Mr. Evans. My name is Sita. I represent the District of Columbia. I live there. Thank you. I just want to reiterate that I think we all really appreciate you giving it to us straight and being very honest with the problems that Metro faces. I guess to end on a positive and constructive note, you know, beyond talking to our congressional representative or other local politicians, can you name a couple other ways we can help Metro, at least in the more short term?
Sure.
Because I imagine that, you know, I got to be honest, I'm not very persuaded by the sort of current state of political affairs, unfortunately. I think we all share that sentiment. And I'm hopeful, but I'm not 100% optimistic that, you know, our advocacy is going to play in our favor, at least in the short term. So during the sort of next year ahead, what else can we do? You know, whether that's, you know, specifically talking to WMATA staff about ways to improve their Twitter accounts or their customer service at the stations, or, you know, other creative ways. What can we do to help you guys?
Yeah. The best thing you can do is let me know what's happening.
Okay.
And it's important. Yeah, you're right. Even more, don't worry about talking to the congressman as much as that, because I'll do that. But I need to hear from all of you what's happening out there. I mean, we are about to engage in an enormous challenge that no one is ready for, nor no one knows exactly, even us, what to expect. So the best I can hear from you all who are riding this thing every day, who are involved in this thing, is tell me where we can fix, you know, it's not fixed, tell me where we can make it less inconvenient, going back to your question. What's happening? And let us know, is there a fix, is there information you're not getting? Where is Metro falling down on the job? And the region, the jurisdictions falling down on the job. And those ideas, if you can get them to me, I can get them to where they need to go.
And so what's the
Where would you like us to funnel those to Tom? Is Tom volunteering? No.
Yeah. Send them to my email.
We can funnel them together.
Jack
and then I'll see you.
DCCouncil.us is my email. If you send them there, I get them.
Okay.
You know, we do get hundreds a day, but we filter them and send them over to Tom if they're Metro, or somebody else if they're something else. But we do get them, and they eventually get to me within a day or so, and we'll respond to them, and we'll take the suggestions. And the one value, always remember, I am the chairman of the board. So I am ability to bring things back to people. I really do have that ability. And, you know, people at some point have to listen to me. And my personality is such, as you can guess, that I am very impatient, and then I lose my temper. And so people have started to listen, because they don't want me to lose my temper. So if you have good ideas, I will bring them back, and I will make Metro listen, and if they make sense, we'll implement them. It comes down to it. It's like our audit. You know, when I got here, I couldn't believe that the Metro's audited financials, turned out to be 9 months late when I first arrived here. I couldn't believe it. Then the next year, we were 4 months late. 4 months later, this past year, with our audit. It's unheard of. As I said to some of the board members, if this was Fairfax County, what would happen to you if your audit was late? You'd be fired. You'd be thrown out of office. And it seemed acceptable here. So I took a line from Tony Wins. Remember Tony Wins, mayor of the District of Columbia?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He started out as chief financial officer back in 1995 when the district couldn't produce an audit on time either. And Tony said to everyone who would listen, first day on the job, I will produce a clean audit on time, or I'm going to quit at the end of a year. That's what I'm going to do. But what he didn't tell everybody, which he told me, he went back, sat down with his staff. He said, if I don't do this on time in a year, I'm going to quit. But before I quit, I'm going to fire everybody in the room here. That's a true story. So I have said, everybody's job is on the line here. The CFO, the Inspector General, everybody. If we don't have a clean audit this year on time, then everybody's fired. That's my impatience. We can't afford to not. I can't get my automatic drawdowns on money that I need to build the system unless I have a clean audit. I got downgraded on Wall Street. I'm embarrassed that that happened to us. You know, I've been the district. I've taken us from a B to a triple A, and here I'm with this organization gets downgraded. It's an embarrassment. You know, when I went up there on behalf of the district, they pulled me aside and said, what metro? It's a wreck. You know, and so I have assured them that we are going to change things here. And we are, or people are just going to be gone. It's too important not to. It really is. It's just too important not to. But I just want to tell everybody, we got a road ahead. This is not going to be easy. It's going to be hard. There's going to be a lot of attitudinal changes in the elected, appointed, governing officials in this region that are going to have to change if we're going to be able to save this thing. And we are not there. We are not there yet. But your help can be very, very helpful. Again, the riders tell us what's going on, what we can do better, and then spread the word, you know, to everybody you talk to that we got to get this fixed. So I want to thank you for having me tonight. I appreciate it. Yeah. The black cat, yeah. To go tell
and
them
some of us. Some of us have the pleasure of meeting with you next week, too. The leadership team will be meeting with your executive board members.
Oh, good. Yeah. Good. I'm excited. We have a good group together, and I think we can, it's going to be tough, but I think we can make some progress and, you know, get some money, address some of these problems. You know, we can turn this thing around. By the time I leave here, I want to have a system we're real proud of. So. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. So I think the approval, well, we're into the agenda, but officially hearing no objections, will somebody move to approve tonight's agenda?
Second. Moved.
Second? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Thank you. It's passed. So, back to the right page here. We are now moving on to our official public comment period. How many do we have signed up, Joy, for tonight?
Two
signed up. Okay, go ahead.
All right, number one would be Mr. Rich Badgermore. Forgive me for not pronouncing
the name. Come on up to the microphone. Or you can, he can just come up.
Thank you. I have 2 minutes. So I really appreciate you you guys letting me be here. I really appreciate the efforts of the RAC. I think it's going to take folks like everybody in this room to make things happen. Thank you for what you do. That doesn't get said enough.
Thank you.
You're
right.
Several months ago over at MLK, when there was a meeting with the GM, there was a guy, he brought up the incident where the substation was on fire at
Stadium Armory.
Yeah. And one thing I thought about, or he thought about, was the communication there. They had a video on the front page. And there was an interview with a guy who was in there with the hard hat doing the actual work, fixing stuff. And he says, here's what's broken. Here's everything that's, oh, my God, look at all this stuff. We're going to fix it. Here's how long it's going to take. That was really great. You know, folks liked that. And there are so many other opportunities, not problems, opportunities to do that. And the first one that I think about is ATC, automatic train. What happened to that? What is like total radio silence? Hey guys, here's what's happening with ATC. Here's how far we are. Here's how far we've gotten since we sent out that huge article on the news page in early 2015, was it? And like, hey, we're going to have ATC on the red line on 8 cars. What happened? So I really think that is the way that Metro needs to approach the communication.
Can I just get a clarification from you? I mean, you talked about the video. That was the one that was on the website. Is that correct? On the front, the homepage. Mm-hmm. When you talk about, I absolutely understand what you're saying about the, you know, telling people the stories of what the progress is and what's changing. Mm-hmm. Are you also suggesting those be videos, or in what form are you mentioning in your mind? What would be
the videos?
The videos, okay.
Absolutely. It grabs attention, and it's easy. It's accessible. Subtitle it. People like it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. Next.
Next up is our honorary guest, Mr. Jeff Larimore.
Oh, yes. I saw Jeff over there.
I thought he was a member of the RAC.
I had great restraint not speaking earlier.
I know. I saw you come in.
Aren't you a member of the RAC?
Apparently not. So I had just two comments on actually SafeTrack that I wanted to share. The first one is Blue Line related. So I wanted to share first a concern about the shutdown from Arlington to Roslyn for Surge 2 that starts in 2 weeks. So first of all, I don't understand why Metro is hiding that from the headlines, that they are closing a section of the track. That every other major sort of single tracking or track shutdown is in the headline except for that one. I've told everyone that I can tell. No one seems to care. So I wanted you to know about that, because there's still people that do not know that section is shutting down and you cannot take the blue line in.
I'll yield you back your time. Specifically, this is a Eastern orange, silver, blue shutdown that they snuck in a line that said, oh, by the way, we're going to be shutting down between Pentagon and Roslyn also. BT dubs.
Yeah. In addition to that, the other piece I don't understand is that every other time where they are shutting down a track, they are having a bus bridge. There is no bus bridge from Arlington Cemetery to Roslyn. They say you have to go in through the city, where, by the way, there's also going to be less trains on the orange and silver line to try to get out to where you're going. So I want to know what the rationale is for why there was no bus bridge. Along the lines of communications, I also want to just share some thoughts on the SafeTrack plan being communicated. I think I echo everything that Chris has been saying about communications. Today, Mr. Wiedefeld said that I think that the region is ready, and internally I know we're ready, but riders don't see that. Everyone I've talked to, there is a huge number of people who say, I have no idea how I'm getting to work. Beyond the first surge, there's no information on the website on what the alternative plans are that people can use. Until a week and a half ago, the website had the wrong maps, and it was only after I pointed out that they got it fixed. So I think that the jurisdictions, the OPM, et cetera, haven't said anything about what their plans are going to be. Riders are not ready, and I think that it would behoove this committee, as the advisory council for riders, to let Metro know they aren't doing a good enough job of letting riders know what their options are. People know that there are shutdowns, but they don't know how they're going to get to work and how to get around it, because Metro hasn't communicated those options.
Okay, I know you had to talk really, really fast. Do we already have this information from you, or can you provide it? Because I think, Will, your group is providing feedback on SafeTrack. I want to make sure that you have that. And I don't know, was this already in your email, or is this some new stuff?
I mean, the first thing was in my email. I've certainly been sort of letting Metro know through Twitter, letting Lynn Bowersox know. So that certainly is. And then in terms of, it's certainly, I believe in my email, but if not, I can sort of send that to you as well. That
if it's something you haven't already sent me that I forwarded to him, why don't you do that, and I'll make sure Will gets it. Thanks. Yeah. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
Public comment in person. We have public comment that came in since our last meeting from 6 other people, and through the RAC comments line through email. And I want to go over the content of those. I'm not going to read the entire letters. My plan is, and you guys can help me with this, is to give you the gist of it and then forward it to the committee that seems most appropriate to take that particular piece of feedback. So anyway, let me run through them and see if that makes sense to you. So we had a woman request that smoking be banned at bus stops and bus shelters. And what some of you may know, maybe not everybody, is that most of the shelters are not, they don't belong to Metro. And so they are covered by the policy in the jurisdiction and enforcement within the jurisdiction. So, but it is banned at all Metro-owned and operated or run, controlled ones. So that was something that she wanted to do. And I do share with her I have the same concerns. But I asked her if she wanted to provide some specifics so we would know where she's been seeing the problem. And I don't know, does anybody know for a fact, is there even a no smoking sign anywhere on any bus shelter or any?
I've seen.
You have seen it? I don't remember.
Not large.
There are like some?
Fairfax County has stickers.
Okay. Perhaps because Fairfax County has got an ordinance.
And I can tell you the Silver Spring Transit Center, which is a huge bus stop, does have no smoking signs, even though it's very open air.
Okay. But anyway, I've already referred this one to Will for the customer service. Second is something where someone was concerned about were the train schedule changes for Safe Track going to be posted in advance of the surges so that they could plan out what is happening. And Joy very quickly got an answer on that, that the plan right now is to have them out there a week ahead. And the things for the first one is already out there, except maybe the weekend. I guess even the weekend is going to be out there by now. So that was good news, and hopefully, you know, if any of you use, I use the trip planner a lot, and if you find out anything different and you have troubles, please speak up. We had someone who had some very creative ideas about 24-hour Metro bus service. He thought it was especially important right now with the cutback in train travel and the cutback of the late night hours that the people that really have to get around had a way to do it. And he had a lot of specific ideas about ways to do it and kind of tie them to the rail lines and so forth. Not sure who... Well, I guess this is part of Safe Track, but it's probably more permanent, too. So I don't know if that's something that I should... Will, I don't know if you heard all that, if you want to get that one, or if you even heard what I said. But I'd take any input about what we do with that. Any ideas? Okay, well, we'll figure something out. Someone had just sent in something saying she hoped that the Safe Track was finalized soon, and by the time we got it, it was finalized, so that one was easy. A couple that just came in today, we had somebody who had some suggestions on safety, about lighting, about thought we should advertise about our cameras, even if they're not visible, so that people who might see the signs about everybody being on camera might deter some of the crime. Also thought there should be a rider's safety event to teach riders about the doors and what to do and how to open if they need to. And I'm going to forward that to the safety committee if it's – oh, I just realized Sherry isn't here. So I don't know what – anyway, I'm forwarding it to the safety committee. The last one today was about Senior Park. The seniors get half-price transit, you may or may not know, but not any discount on parking, and there was just a request to consider that. So I made it clear that the person knew that, you know, we are on a very long budget cycle, but that was something that certainly would go into the plot for consideration. I don't know what the reasoning behind that is or isn't. So that will go to the budget team.
All right.
Yes. Oh, Patrick, I was going to send you the safety one too because of the lighting.
Yes, just so that, we have.
And seniors.
As far as the lighting goes, AAC is working on a project with respect to lighting, so we have a pretty good project plan with track lighting, mezzanines, and that all rolled up.
And I mentioned that in my letter, and I told her I would send it to you too, because I wasn't sure. She specifically mentioned Van Ness, and I said if there were others, Mm-hmm. If she, I asked her to let us know if there were others, because I knew there was a lot of work already underway.
Great, yeah, we're working on that. The other one that you mentioned that I don't know if I caught it correctly. Did you talk about travel training?
I'm sorry, what?
The message before this one, this last one.
Yes, you meant, well, you mentioned travel training.
Now, what?
Safety
okay,
training.
Is that travel? Because for people with disabilities, they do have a specific travel training program with the Columbia Lighthouse for the Blind, and that's a specific O&M term for a person with disabilities.
This person was just referring to something to educate the public on how things work in an emergency and, you know, talking
right.
about everything
okay.
from if they are told, you know, if they are trying to open the door or using
okay.
or
gotcha
whatever.
Okay, got you on that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Okay, so those are the comments, and I'll be forwarding those to the respective committees, and one the leadership team will keep. So on to past meeting minutes. I think you've all had them in your hands for several days. Do I have a motion to accept the minutes from May?
I make a motion that we accept May minutes.
And second? Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Thank you. Hey, that was fast. Okay. My monthly report, my monthly update is typically in your packet, isn't this month because there was no, the deadline is usually like the 20th of the month, and this time it's today, so hey, I'm going to write it by tomorrow. So you'll get, I'll send it to you. I wanted to spend a few minutes on some of the things that happened at the one board committee day this week, this month, and I should say in May. There were several things that I think would be of interest. You may or may not have read about them in the media. The finance committee, the board's finance committee, authorized the GM to temporarily reduce or waive fares for periods of, I think, up to 48 hours. But they expanded the ability for him to do that, and he still has to explain it to the board afterwards, but he doesn't have to get prior authority. The new safety officer was introduced. I met him. He happened to sit down next to me. And so we talked a bit and hope to have him visit with us maybe next month even. There was a lot of updating on the FTA. I think the chair alluded to it. There have been safety recommendations that have been internally generated that have come from the FTA, that have come from the NTSB, came from the old, why can I not think of the name of it now? Tri-state oversight, yes. How soon we forget. Anyway, lots of discussion, lots of comments from the board to the staff on the importance of everything that they're addressing. There was especially a lot of, you know, because we are under FTA oversight now, a lot of encouragement from the board for greater communication and working with the FTA to make sure that they are our partner, we are working together, and know what each other is doing and thinking. There was a quarterly safety report that talks about all of the various safety measurements that are taken every month, every quarter. There were preliminary findings. At that point, this meeting was just after that McPherson incident, so there was just only some preliminary findings of what had gone wrong at that time, but they did discuss it to some extent. The customer service and operations and security meeting. Now, if any of you have not heard of vital signs, that's something I think you really would like to take a look at. Jeffrey, you might be interested, especially because of your question about performance metrics, because vital signs is something that's put out every quarter, and it's presented to the board, and it is available to the public. It is on the website, and I will happily send all of you a link. It's a lot to digest, but it does talk about all the things, what's up, what's down, like escalators in service, and elevators, and reliability, and accidents, and all of these things. It's really something that if you want to know what the numbers are for things, it's there. There's also a quarterly security report focusing mostly on part one crime, which are the more serious crimes. In most categories, I mean, we hear about crime a lot, but the absolute numbers are reasonably small, and most of them are up over last year. But they also showed the 15 different things actions are taking to try to reduce crime. One of them, as we all know, that a little more in the patrol area. There's a real estate committee also, and they very quickly okayed the sale. There's an acre apparently near Congressional Heights. I'm not really familiar with that station, but there's an acre there that was approved to be sold. So that is the board committee stuff. And I'll send you all the links so you can take a look at, pick and choose what everything you might be interested in. I will do that. They're trying to experiment with one board day a month, and we'll see. There was one last month, one this month. We'll see how that goes. Okay, on to the committee reports. I get to start. I rearranged it so that the same people that have been last aren't always the same. Anyway, leadership in government. One thing I would like to talk about, if you have not already read the bylaws, because you're brand new and you haven't gotten to it yet, or you're an old-time person and you just haven't read it lately, I really encourage you to do it. There are a couple of things in there that I'd like to point out especially. It's on our RAC page. It's got a link to the bylaws. One of the two things, because there have been, it pointed out to me some failures in the last month. One of them is standards of conduct, and it has to do with the treatment of speakers. The standard of conduct is pretty simply stated. It's to conduct ourselves in a respectful, courteous manner, and to treat our speakers, the public and ourselves, in a courteous manner. And a few people brought to my attention they felt a couple of us failed on that in the last month or two. And I would have to agree. And so I really am the quote punishment can be that I escort them out of here, and I don't really want to do that. So I'm going to just count on everybody being more cordial if they weren't always. Most of you are. The other is about contacting the media. I'm aware and was told that there was someone within the RAC that did leak the recommendation that was going to the board on Safe Track and our request that they consider not charging peak fares, and that the rule is that anyone who's been approached by the media or plans to talk, it will be in an occasion where they will talk to the media, must first either get prior approval to do that or report it afterwards. Say, you know, I talked to this person, they asked me this question. And the caveat that many of you have heard, if you were around very long, is that you have to make clear whether you're speaking for yourself personally or on behalf of the RAC. And typically, unless you've been designated to be the RAC spokesperson to some event, which you all may be, you would be speaking for your own opinion, especially if it's a topic that we haven't discussed. Now, if it's a topic we've discussed openly here in a meeting, it's fair game. You can say that the RAC's discussed that, and this is how we view it, if we made a decision, a recommendation, whatever. So this is something that the RAC has to follow in order to, I think, maintain the trust of the board, that we won't leak something out before they've had a chance to view and comment. And so anyway, that's all I want to say about that. Just take a look at all the bylaws. It's not that long a read, maybe, I don't know, 10 or 12 pages or something. And take a look and just see what you might be surprised when you read it. Then I made a vague reference to the fact that the leadership team has our quarterly opportunity to meet with the board executive committee, which is the chairman of the board, Mr. Evans, and it's the principal board member from each of the three jurisdictions. He's the DC, Mr. Corcoran for Virginia, Ms. Keturah Harley for Maryland, and federal is, oh, I think it's the new one, and I don't know who it is, actually. David Strickland, thank you. One of the three people that he mentioned that he had given some information to.
So we have an agenda prepared that we discussed, the leadership team discussed. Is that me or somebody else? Yes, it doesn't need to be off.
Yeah.
Great, thank you. The agenda that, not in necessarily in order, but some of the topics, we want to talk about the staffing. We all know that Joy is wonderful and helps us however she can, but we'd like to have staffing that supports us with the rate of travel that we'd like to make. We want to talk to them about the recommendations. We had a lot of recommendations given, or several recommendations given to them, to the board in October and in February, and the answers have not been forthcoming very quickly. So we know that sometimes they'll agree and sometimes they won't agree with what we do, but there were some things that we didn't get answers from, and so we want to talk about that process. And we're going to give the committee chairs, have given me information to the work plan for the year, just to say how far we've gotten on each of the ones that we've started. I think the brand new members who started in March is still, I think I've given you a copy of the work plan. Does that ring a bell of all the things that we're tackling this year? You've seen that. Okay, good. At least one of you nodded, so I'm going to count that. Talking about the interest in social media and also talking about, one that I'll cover later. We usually get about an hour. It's my understanding, Patrick, that this is both the AAC and the RAC. And I'm, right. Have you submitted your agenda already to John?
No, we're submitting that, I think it's tomorrow.
Yeah, we are too. So we're assuming that you'll go first and that you'll have the, assuming we have an hour, you'll have a half hour, and when we'll have our half hour.
Exactly so. And we're not quite sure, at least I haven't been told how that will be handled as far as time and minutes, but I'm sure John will let us know.
Do we still think it's at 9 in the morning?
It's at 9 in the morning.
Great.
With the board meeting at 10, I understand.
Okay.
Right, so it'll be a quick hour.
Okay, that's it for leadership and governance. So now, Safety Committee. Christine, do you have anything that you can say about that? I noticed Sherry was the one that was going to take the lead to get the first meeting going. So do you, and if not you, one of the other members, have an update for that?
I have not heard. We had some email that Sherry was going to send some things. I have not heard from our last communications that you were involved with. I don't know if someone else has, but I haven't heard.
Well, some of you, didn't she send out something that asked when you were available?
Oh. What things were.
Yeah.
Yes,
okay,
that. Beyond
that. But you're not past that yet. Okay, no. So I'm going to hope, maybe if you can help that along. And
yes.
Oh, Jeffrey, did you want to make? Okay, thanks. Okay. Because what we're looking for is when you are going to meet, and then when you do meet, to nominate a chair for approval at this meeting. Okay. Okay. PPP.
Nothing huge to report, but I want to say thanks to Valerie. She has been working hard on developing some draft survey questions that we hope to first bounce off the AAC and then the rest of you in order to utilize Amplify to get some rider feedback on the 7000 series cars. So, Patrick, we will be contacting you shortly with that, and let me know how we can work together to get some feedback from the AAC on those questions.
Okay, thank you. Customer Service Committee.
Ooh, I get a chance to speak now.
Yes, it's your turn, Will. Do you have your microphone on?
That didn't need to be heard by everybody.
Oh.
All right. Let me hold on a second. Let me pull this back up. Okay. So let's see. In general, we spoke a little bit more detail about the fact that we still wanted to focus on getting some more specialized training for station managers. Of course, we aren't sure yet how that's going to be handled. I commented a little bit about, and now I do actually have an update on this, the MVP program, Metro Volunteer Program. So I had commented that I had been turned down, right? That has not changed. But what has changed, in fact, this happened in the last 2 days, and including today, I've been getting continual follow-up emails from the company that says, all right, you know, you need to complete the background check, click the link. So I'm still getting these emails. I also got an email from Kasim.
Yeah, I think okay. He's coordinating it.
All right, so apparently, this, of course, well, I got one from Kasim initially. Now I got another email from Kasim 2 days ago, same exact email. And so I responded back to him. I said, Kasim, and I went to complete detail with him this time. I said, all right, I'm just going to rip this red. So I told him, hold on.
I'm just trying to figure out if this is a committee report.
Okay, no.
Is this a committee report?
This is part of the committee report because this was part of my.
I'll be quiet while I eat.
Yes, this was part of my meeting. So I told him, I said, well, I got this email once before, and so I told him the results and didn't understand why, but this is one of the things that we were working on the RAC as far as communications inside of Metro because of the fact that there's obviously an issue here. And so I shouldn't be getting this email again from him specifically. And then the very next day, I get another email today. Okay.
Well, let's deal with it. All right, we'll deal with it.
All right, yes, we will. But I just wanted to comment. That was part of my meeting. All right, and then the other couple of things that were discussed were, and by the way, Denise, I saw your emails today. I've been cutting grass since 8 a.m. this morning and could not chime in on that email chain with you and Barbara. But, I haven't seen those, so I couldn't comment on those. I did comment about the fact that, as we just talked with Christine about, I was waiting to hear from Sherry, but of course, we all know that she sent the email about the time's availability. So that was the latest, of course, that I've heard anything from that, too. And then the last big point was that the committee members in general were stating that they were not impressed with Lynn Bowersock's presentation. Some of the things that she was stating we didn't feel was sufficient enough and that she pretty much kind of blew off some of the questions and concerns that we had. So that was basically it. Happy, I'm done.
let me ask a couple questions. If you want to share some of the specifics, I would love to hear that, if you want to do that. Do you have any feedback from any of the people that said they would test the bus ETA?
No, because, well you never know who it was.
Yeah.
I
did, twice. Yeah, okay, but you haven't heard from anybody. Is there anyone out here using Bus ETA?
I did. Yes, I have been.
Can you provide your feedback to Will?
Sure.
And that, okay.
So, working really well 9 times and then yesterday, didn't work well. The bus wasn't there, it said it was there. I waited a minute, it said it wasn't there.
Okay. Anyone else that's testing Bus ETA? We have a member of the public that appears to be trying to raise his hand. So thank you for the reminder that the public can participate in our agenda items. You want to come up to the mic and say something about that?
I just want to say it's
we need you to come up to the mic because it's recorded, it's streaming.
All right, I just want to say I think Bus ETA had some bugs at first, but I think it's been much more reliable in the last several weeks. I use it daily for my Metrobus trip to Boston, so I think it's gotten better. I think they've worked out a lot of it. They were receptive to some of my Twitter feedback, and I think they worked through some of the issues.
I know there were more of you that said you were going to be using it. Has anyone else? No? You have, Lorraine? Can you provide your feedback to Will?
Okay, I've used it twice, really, because sometimes I just I'm running for it, so there's no really chance to use it. So, but
ahead, you go. No comment.
Barbara?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. So about bus ETA, is it working, is what you're saying?
Well, we want the feedback's supposed to go to Will.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, we can talk Thursday, too, but I've tried it several times, and it's not working. It didn't even show my route. In other words, I put the route in. I made sure that the website's still there, everything. Put in the route, so there were no buses coming. I kept checking. I know there's, anyway, and I looked out my window, and there goes the bus, but bus ETA said no buses coming.
Hmm. Okay, well, we need it documented as it was described so that Will can submit that and we can submit our overall findings. The other thing I wanted to ask about is I noticed customer committee, which I think last met about the day that SafeTrack came out or something. Anyway, you were putting together feedback on the communications and the outreach and for Lynn, and so I just wonder how you're coming on that. I'd seen emails from both you and Colin, and I just, is that ready to go yet? Okay, do you expect it will be soon? Are you on the mic?
Hopefully we can get something out by next week.
Okay. All right, thank you.
And to that point, there was a Amplify survey about it this week.
Right, yes.
So that would help as well.
Right, yeah, I saw that. Thank you for mentioning it. Okay. Anything else then, Will? Enough for you? Okay. Budget and finance. Now, this is kind of an odd situation. The budget and finance team did meet, and we nominated a new chair who isn't here tonight, but I don't think that means anything. Clarence Flanders has accepted the nomination, but the requirement is that it be approved by this group. So I move to approve Clarence Flanders as the chair of the RAC Budget Committee. Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Other than those who are absent, like Clarence. Okay. one thing I did want to ask, one of the things on the budget work plan is to monitor select paths as it proceeds. And we had some discussions about it over the last few months. And last month, some of you and the public mentioned, especially third party issues perhaps, but the employers, we're still getting reports that some of the employers are not on board with it and don't seem to know about it. And maybe with a third party. So I did communicate with Sean Cannon, who's in charge of planning, and he provided me with a list of, there is a long list of employers that were contacted, but that with repeated contacts have not responded. And there are, surprisingly and disappointingly, many agencies and employers that have said, too complicated, I don't want to deal with it. And he drafted a letter, Sean did, to Mr. Wiedefeld, and asked for him to ask the board's support, which I offered to add our support next week when we meet with our chair and the others, that to try to apply some pressure. Now, it's if an employer is one of those who fully funds everybody's rides, then a pass isn't really something you need, unless they're coming from so far away that even the full funding isn't enough. You know, but it being 200 and something now, So I don't know who on the list falls into that category. I just know it's a long list. And so I told Jack I would talk. I mean, I told Sean I would talk to you guys tonight and see if you are in agreement. I see some heads nodding that when we meet with the executive committee next week, we will say add our support to that we would like to see. I don't know who has to do what, to be very honest, but that there is some, and I think there might be an idea coming on that from here. So go ahead, Colin.
Well, if he makes that list publicly available, specifically the entities that are not willing to participate.
Are you turned on?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
We could publicly shame them.
Yeah, and I don't know. I don't know if I have the ability, but I'm not sure. But anyway, the list went, I believe it went to the board. I'm not really sure. He sent me, it did, because they were in two attachments, so it wasn't clear. Okay, so all the board already got the list. So they may know. But if it helps for us to know, so that if you have contacts with employers and you don't already, but you probably already know if it's your employer and they've said no or whatever. But yeah.
So, I was wondering, is that list public?
Well, not that I know of.
Okay.
It's just an internal Excel spreadsheet.
Is it possible to make it public, or?
Yeah, I'll double check. I think okay. I had asked them, is it okay for me to share the content, the general content? And it was mind-boggling to me how long the list was of either no response or responded, no, thank you, don't want to do it. So WageWorks, which is the third party that my company that I used to work for, they're on it. They're marked as people that have accepted it and do use it. So if any of you use WageWorks and you've got a different story, please say so. And if you're dying of curiosity about a specific one, you could tell me what the employer is and I can take a check and see if they're on the list. So that's my report from the Budget Committee. We are starting to also think about, we're starting to think about the fiscal 2018 and what we need to do. James.
I would say the other side of this is not only sort of who the employers are not participating, but also is WMATA going to be generating a performance report as to indicate the actual participation or usage of the new select fare system, so at least be some indication of the level of interest.
And that was the memo. It's a memo from Sean to Paul.
Okay.
Giving that sort of thing. I don't know if it's exactly what you're referring to, but it did talk about the general acceptance, that there's a very good level of acceptance, that those who've used it want to continue to use it for the most part, that sort of thing. And I'm happy to share that information.
I mean, I guess I'm getting at things like, what are the numbers of people that are actually using it? And, are they seeing any kind of increase in maybe revenues because
they
of
have,
that?
They have a lot of people who have purchased the pass. We're not regular riders before the pass.
But I think that would be helpful as far as perhaps selling it to other employers that, in fact, it is being used where it's offered.
I think that's a good point, yes.
And so to just sort of have vague things that you ought to do this, it would be more meaningful if you do have real numbers behind this that where it is being offered, it's being used.
Yeah, that is. Some of that's available, whether it's as much as you're describing. Yeah. And all right, so that's the Budget and Finance Committee meeting and update. I think the one thing remaining is announcements and roundtable. The one thing that did not get into the list of all the upcoming meetings is the June 26th emergency exercise at, is it Spring? Greensboro? I never can remember the exact. It's Spring Hill, Greensboro. I know. Anyway, it's the next stop to Tyson's, I believe. Do you want to say something about that, Christine?
I was going to ask. I shared with you I asked Bob Hester if there was anything he would like me to share at this meeting, because this will be our last meeting prior to that event. So he said to share with the committee that per our meeting, the meeting I had with Bob and Ron, I will be involved with helping observe the train operator during the exercise. Also, they will be using theater smoke to make the exercise as realistic as possible for the first responders, and they continue to look at ways to create more realistic and challenging environments for jurisdictional and metro first responders. Mm-hmm. Yes, that I share that.
Okay. Thank you. Now, Hopefully you all saw the email that I sent out saying here's how you sign up, here's where you get more information. Some of you are new since the last one. I mean, it's a great thing, I think, to learn about what's being done. I mean, the primary objective of this is to train the first responders and the WMATA staff people to work out what they are supposed to do in these different emergencies and to learn about the different scenarios that exist. Boy, there's a lot of signs going up. To learn about the scenarios. And so this one, like I said, is smoke, and one before was a fire, and you know, some of them are up above, and some of them are in tunnels, so they're trying to slowly but surely hit the list. So looks like there are some comments about this. Do you want to say something more about that?
Yeah, you just reminded me. I would like to add on that the role I will take in observing the operator for this time around will be to provide what they could have done better in regards to customer service. So anyone that does attend the event, I would be more than happy to collect all of the comments from everyone and put them together and then provide them to Bob.
Yeah, and just to clarify, in general, the RAC members serve as riders, just the riders on the train, just as though we were the ones there when it had the incident.
Is there a deadline to sign up for the exercise?
Yeah, it's just a couple days before it. I think it's the 24th. It's at the very bottom of the whole thing. It says be sure to apply by the 24th. Joseph.
I was wondering if that exercise will be recorded. I know the gentleman earlier, Rich, said that videos and educational opportunities like this would be beneficial for the public. And I was wondering if any of this is being recorded and archived somewhere so that the public can know that this is happening and that, you know, that we could see what's going on if we're not able to wake up early or people are working during that time, which it may not be, but
yeah,
people
is,
who don't.
Yeah, they do ask to be there at 6:30.
And it's a select number of people, too, so, like, not everyone who wants to join can partake in this. So is there any way that we can make
can.
It? All of us, maybe, but in terms of the general public, like,
sure.
They may not be able
you know,
to participate.
I don't know, and I think that would be an idea that you could extend to them, Christine, about, you know, if there's, I mean, what I have seen is that there's just video typically on TV that night somewhere about the fact that there
It'll
was
It'll be streamed
one.
On Periscope.
What?
It'll be streamed on Periscope.
From our channel?
From
official
from,
channel?
From my phone. Because, okay. No, otherwise
well, why
it is
we
not.
Why don't we do that? Like, I mean, isn't it our, you know, that's our exercise.
Do you
like,
have,
we
you
don't have a channel.
Do you
yeah,
have,
I know. But why can't we start one? Like, why can't they do things like this?
Okay, and Will, did you have a question or something?
No comment.
Are you going to, you're maintaining your perfect attendance, right? You're going to, he's been to every drill. This is what, five, six, I don't know. I've been to all but one.
15, no. I believe it was recorded, the Eisenhower one.
I guess I just wasn't aware of it.
Was it?
No,
I thought it was recorded.
Recorded it for internal use. It was
okay,
not released to the public. So
something.
From the
okay.
public's point of view, the only right. thing they saw was my live Periscope tweet, stream.
And usually news stations report that the event occurred, or sometimes I've seen in the past where, you know, comments have been made on news stations. But yeah, no, I mean, I've never seen any live recording, but I thought that there was a recording, but apparently there was a recording that's just internal. So,
is that something we could work on, or is that outside of our jurisdiction, or something we could recommend, or through committee? Or I'm just wondering
well,
what the
Christine,
process is.
Christine has volunteered to be, and they agreed to have one of us as a liaison to what they're doing. So I would say any suggestions we can funnel through her.
Yeah, if I can add on to that, and we had this experience at the last emergency drill, Barbara and I, the purpose of the drill is to give the first responders experience in responding to this type of drill, get them experience in dealing with the opening the door, something as simple as opening the door, getting the people out in an emergency situation.
How to use various equipment.
How to
that's
use the various equipment,
with, yeah.
bring the equipment into, in this case, you know, into a tunnel. That jurisdiction actually requested that we use the theater smoke because they wanted to make it as realistic as possible. So when we talk about, you know, like sharing this with the public, I can't speak for them at this moment, but my first thought goes towards is this something that should be shared inside what the tunnels are? You know, there's just things that happen in this day and age that I don't know if how much do we really want to share, and I don't know that we can answer that, and I think that's a question that should come from Bob or Ron, right, for that matter, in, you know, how much of this should we personally be sharing? The media is there. They do a lot of coverage, so I don't know what else to say about that, but I think the concentration, the point I'm making is the concentration is for that jurisdiction to experience first responder and what to do in the case of
it. It just seems like, because it might assuage some of the public's concerns about what first responders are or are not able to do, or just in terms of educating even the public on what first responders should be doing, or, you know, how to react to first responders who are, you know, I mean, because it's not just a one-sided approach, you know, like the public needs to know how to respond also, and I think currently there's a gap, like we're not really educating the public on.
Well, I think our concentration as far as the public should go back to something I had said before, and Barbara had shared that someone sent via email that we should be educating the public on how to get out in a case of emergency if they're there. In this particular case, this is to train that jurisdiction. So I think we should think about really what we need to educate the public on in a case of emergency, what to do in a case of emergency, which doors to exit, et cetera.
And I just strongly feel that we should be owning our story and we should be owning the education instead of relying on the media solely. They have a role, certainly, but I definitely think that we, like as Metro at least, should own that aspect, and that they should play a more active role in ensuring that the public are
We are
educated.
Running out of time, so I think maybe if you want to direct any of the comments directly to Christine, and there is a video that was made available right after Carol Glover died, and I believe it's still on the website, but I'm not sure. I think it is. It was. Okay. And so there is a video to educate the public, and so but whether that is, you know, the kind of thing you think is, you know, doesn't mean we still can't have recommendations. I'd like to, are these about the drill that you'd like to, okay. Okay, can you just communicate directly with, unless everybody needs it?
No, I think everybody should hear this, and this is real quick. One of the things that I expressed when I came back from being part of one of the first initial drills was that I think that, especially in the tunnels, that everybody should be able to see it, because when people are on the trains and they don't realize how dangerous it is inside the tunnels, and if they got a chance to actually see, they'd be more aware and then understand why they have to exit on certain sides of the train and how, you know, scary it is in there. That's it.
And all of you remember, you can bring a family member with you, as long as we're over a certain age or whatever. Chris, any another announcement?
Well, we're in announcements and roundtable, so I'd like make a point and also a question. And the point is, we didn't release that letter that got leaked to the media. We didn't put that on our website. So we need to start owning our own material, to take your word. We need to own our own material. And we've been asking for a social media presence 6 months now, at least 6 months. I think it's time to tell them that we're going to have a social media presence, and at the very minimum, start advertising our meetings. I'm not saying we need to have two-way communication, but we need to establish that. And we also need to move towards taking ownership of our part of the website. Joy does amazing work for us, but things like that letter should have been posted immediately before the media got it.
We do not have the authority to take action. The board has not approved in that area. And the plan was that I understood the board would have the letter in their hands on Thursday, and that I'd actually even told some of you that that was the plan, and that Joy was then going to post it on Friday. And then when it was leaked, and so outside media actually even questioned the board on it, even, you know, I'm not even sure if they'd had a chance to see it yet or not, because I did later learn that they got it on, it actually was sent to them by John and Jennifer on Wednesday before the Thursday meeting. But at any rate, she went home sick, so it didn't get posted on Friday. And because of all the, I mean, I spent 50 hours that week working on getting that done and doing running interference. And I believe that I heard someone say that they thought, well, maybe this is an argument for us having social media because we can put that stuff out. And I will tell you that I am firmly in belief that this is the fact that this leaked out is a strike against the RAC getting approval for social media because we can't be trusted to deal with things with protocol. We had somebody go to media that did not have approval nor reporting of it. And so I wish that weren't true. Now, I didn't consciously never post it. I think there was just so much about it. I just did nothing and nobody said anything, so that's how it was.
Okay, can we get it posted soon?
Yeah, I kind of struggle with, we don't really have what we have on our, there's a, the bylaws specify what we can put, and it's things that come from meetings and so forth, so I wasn't really sure where we would put it, but we can get past that if we can. I will look at that.
Thank you.
And one thing that I want to, that I plan to talk with the board about next week is, you know, that we know that not everything we're going to recommend is going to be approved, and that was one of them. But we do take it as our responsibility, just as not all of us agreed that that was the right thing to recommend, but the majority did, so we proceeded. That's the right thing to do. And it's the right thing for us to propose it to them, even if we suspect they won't, because that's what our job is. And sometimes they'll say yes, and sometimes they'll say no. And Jack actually, to some public, said, yeah, I wish I could. He said, but, you know, we only have so much revenue, and there was a judgment call that was made, and the people that have the right to make that decision decided against our recommendation. But it means we still had a right to do that recommendation, and it's no mark against us to do it. It's a good thing that we did it. If we only recommended things that were always going to be approved, then we're not recommending enough things. So, other announcements, or sorry, I'm taking you over time. Oh, I didn't even see that. You had your years up. Okay, as long as you guys are okay with staying late, fine. Colin.
So on the topic of letters, I saw recently that the jurisdictions have come together to draft legislation to create the new safety oversight committee for Metro, which is great. However, there are a couple of troubling provisions around confidentiality in that they are, the legislation as it currently stands would grant them the authority to withhold any findings and reports from the public. So I would love to see this body send a letter to those jurisdictions who have developed this legislation to say that's unacceptable. Because if we were to have an oversight body that is effective for Metro, its findings need to be public. Bottom line. Anything else is stupid.
Yeah, and what you've said makes a lot of sense to me. I have to admit that I saw the announcement that they were being formed. I didn't see that, and I'm not by any stretch an expert on it. So you probably have to educate us in that. And if you want to help draft that, I'm all for it. And we will also, now that we have our answer from Jack about who we're supposed to lobby with, we will proceed with that letter drafting, too, that we can use to take to our jurisdictional people or employers or whoever we want to, with the arguments, with some help from the governmental affairs people on the WMATA staff that says this is what they want to, this is what's persuasive to them, this is what you might want to say. We can say what we want, but I'd like their advice. So that would be fine. And who else? Was that it for you? Okay, and Valerie.
Very quickly, I happen to be in one of the stations that has the new Metro Rail ADA signs.
What?
There's new Metro Rail displays. Yeah. Okay. There are some new displays that are installed at specific places. It says where folks at the ADA entrances. Okay. The only thing I want to ask about this is that I observed that the arrival time for the train at Tacoma on this sign is different than the arrival time that's displayed on the sign 20 feet away. So why would the arrival times be different for these two things? You know.
I think I do.
Okay.
Because the information that those two displays are getting come from separate feeds.
So that's help.
So the next question is why? And the next question of that is
I,
why?
I'm not an expert on the IT systems, but having...
I'm happy to get asked that question if you send me the relevant details
yes.
of that so that
yes.
it's more than
it
I can absorb.
It just seemed odd, and it didn't seem like it was doing what it was supposed to do, which is help people
yeah.
know when the train was
sure,
coming.
It's confusing.
Thanks.
Sita.
Sure. Just a quick announcement slash request. Through the Budget and Finance Committee, I'll be helping to lead a research project on different fare pricing models across different American cities and cities around the world, given the fact that the Metro may be looking at, you know, whether or not that could be an option in the future, you know, changing this sort of the model that we currently have to something else, you know, out there. So I guess my sort of request is if you, you know, have lived in a city, if you've been to a city with an interesting pricing model, either in the U.S. or somewhere else outside the country, please come talk, send me an email. We just want to get a sort of a full database of sort of all the different models that are out there. Thanks.
And we do have both Sham and,
yes.
Why am I drawing a blank? What's that?
Mark, yes.
Mark's coming again. Okay, good.
That's right.
Because they have a lot of that information
mm-hmm.
as well. But it's good to hear all your feedback. That's good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Any more roundtable? Any more sharing? Oh, I shouldn't have asked. James, yes.
Well, I guess just wanted to raise the issue that Chairman Evans mentioned about the proposal from Roger Berliner, who happens to be the chair of the Council of Governments, about deriving a dedicated funding source through some additional taxing revenue that local governments would have to agree to. And I guess what's being kicked around is a sales tax. That for all the discussion about contacting our congressmen and whatnot, I think that for most of us, that's even closer is our local governments. And I think perhaps it might be worth taking some time in one of our meetings to talk about that issue, because a lot of transit agencies around the country do have a dedicated either sales tax, I think Portland's a payroll tax and whatnot. And the big issue I see is that a dedicated revenue source is not a guaranteed revenue source. In fact, many transit agencies around the country are running into financial issues because of, like, during the recession, all those dedicated revenue sources were also off.
Like gas tax has been an issue.
And I guess one of my concerns is that there seems to be this perception that if you have a dedicated revenue source, it's somehow guaranteed, and it's not. And so you still have these issues coming up. And so I think to a certain extent there's kind of a little bit of a false hope here that we're going to solve our problems by that kind of thing. And some of the other transit agencies have had to grapple with that issue.
Right. Thank you. And I think that you may want to,
yeah.
you know, connect with
yeah.
seats on some of that. Okay. Barring anything else, this meeting is adjourned.
Yay.
No, it was somebody who mentioned it, but not in connection with this.
Oh.
And I was